Stock. My name is Dalen Mitchell. I'm the chairperson of the Standing Committee on the Prison and Constitutional Matters. Colleagues, we are here today to table the annual report. On my left-hand side is the very able and capable Ms. Wasima Kamis Ahmad, and to her left is Ms. Martin Lek. Members, I'm going to hand over to you two for introductions.
Thank you, Ricardo McKenzie.
Good morning, Lorraine Diosa, standing in for Vandal Cabrillo.
Good morning, Carlos
Abraucho. Good morning,
for
the record.
Good morning,
Carlos Abraucho.
Good morning, everyone. Cameron Dagmar.
Thank you. I just want to table the apology from Member Basil Cabrillo and Member Gopi is running a few minutes late, so just she comes in and I'll give an opportunity to introduce herself. Premier, over to you to introduce yourself and the team.
Cameron Zilla.
Trevor Daisy.
Dirigas Basson, CFO.
Morning, Andre Chumat, the Corporate Services Centre.
Morning, members. Linda Swift.
Good morning, Marsha Fortin, Head Strategic Programs.
Good morning, members. Michael Hendrickson, DDG People Management.
Good morning, Lucas Buter, Legal Services.
Good morning, Anthony Hazel from Policy and Strategy.
Good morning, Blanche
Gangar from Donald. Good morning, Lucas Arnold, Centre for Innovation.
Good morning, Ihsan Tamai, Centre for Innovation.
Belinda Woods, the Delivery Support Unit.
Nadia Garafani.
Good morning, John Barnard, Strategic Management Information.
Good morning, Kosta Kayalala, International Relations and Priority Programs.
Good morning, Louise Estrada, for People Management Practices.
Good morning, Fire Stain, Corporate Communications.
Good morning, Augie de Freitas, IT.
Good morning, Olma Kaldenberg, Departmental Strategy.
Good morning, Amara Martinez, Policy and Strategy.
Good morning, Robert Shaw, DG Support.
Caroline Lott, Premier's Office.
Thank you very much. Can I ask the members at the back if you can introduce yourselves to the record?
Morning, Marcelino, Premier's Office.
Morning, Leon Kwan.
Good morning, Mr. Marinus, Provost of Treasury.
Good morning,
Christian McKay, Premier's
Support.
Thank you very much. Just for the record, this is a public hearing. So this meeting was advertised in and published in the August, De Burger and Bukane. That's just for the record. Members, from a logistical point of view, we will break at 10 o'clock for a tea break, and this meeting is scheduled until 1 o'clock. So I appeal to you to please work with me so that we could conclude this by 1 o'clock. Premier, over to you for introductory remarks.
Chairperson, honourable members, I am pleased to present the annual report of the Department of the Premier for the 2017-18 financial year. By the end of the period, broadband had been implemented in 1,875 Western Cape government sites. Plans are currently being finalised to extend broadband to municipalities. Austerity measures have been in place in the Department of the Premier for some years now. And 2017-18 was a year of constrained budget. The posts were vacated and could not be filled again. In many cases, existing staff had to take on additional responsibilities while striving to maintain the high standard of service delivery expected of the department. During this time, we have moved from governance of state compliance to governance of service delivery and from governance by reporting to governance by results. The Director General has ensured just that. In 2017-18, the department spent 97.15% of its budget and achieved 92% of its indicator. I would like to commend and thank the Director General, the Superintendent General, management and staff of the department for their hard work and noteworthy achievements during a time of austerity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, before I allow an opportunity, I'm going to give over to the DG to do his introductory remarks, and then we will do questioning on both those inputs.
I just want to thank my colleagues here for all the hard work in the past year. We get the support and the support they gave to me and my department specifically. Thank you, Brendan, and I also want to thank this committee, which always did with us fairly and responsibly. And thank you.
Alright, thank you very much. Members, I'm going to therefore start on pages 14 to 29. And so with regards to the introductory remarks, if you can couple that with pages 14 to 29, because that's the introductions in the annual report. Are there any questions? Honourable McKenzie and Honourable Dagmar.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the introductory remarks. Thank you. For the year under review, the Western Cape went to an extreme drought, as we all know. And I just want to get from the Premier and the HOD, what has been the impact on the drought, particularly on as a leading department in the Western Cape government? What was the innovative initiatives and what was the cost to the government? Because I know later on you talk about water resilience plans, so you can just get more details. And then is the HOD working with the other head of departments satisfied that there has been a behavioral change in the tens of thousands of government employees when it comes to water saving and water saving measures that they've introduced? And also when we talk about the shortage of staff and the vacancies, what has been the impact on the department, because there has been obviously quite a shortage and a delay in filling posts, and obviously I presume some staff had to work harder because they had to do more with less, and what has been the impact of that? And then on page 17 we talk about the third last paragraph on the bottom, the budget challenges and the impact of the rand dollar exchange rate, which we all knew what happened last year. But you can just clarify what was the rand amount. And then on page 19, just more details on the personal vehicle expenditure channel of point 4.3. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Dagmar.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just in regard to the forward by the Premier, the second paragraph talks about embedding good governance principles in the Western Cape, and that has been a central theme. One, if the Premier could reflect on any issues which have happened in the province and the municipalities which she believes has impacted negatively on that good governance principle, if she can reflect on that. And then secondly, in paragraph 3, the Premier makes reference to the fact that the department has annually achieved a 94% of its targets. Is there any explanation as to why there appears to have been a regression in this year, in the sense that that figure has dropped to 92%? Does she have any explanation for that? And then in paragraph 4, reference is made to the Premier's advancement of youth project as a project that has continued to contribute to youth job opportunities. Could the Premier indicate to us, in her view, what specific skills does she believe these interns have actually gained after participating in this project, and how has the department dealt with the thousands of unsuccessful applications who've attempted to be part of the project? Has there been any follow-up with them, or have they simply received letters saying that there hasn't been a place for them? And then, given on page 15 the Premier indicates that this is her final annual report, I think it's quite appropriate to ask the Premier for her to actually reflect on whether there are any decisions that she has taken or decisions that she's failed to take over this term which she actually regrets. As you know, I think it is a very serious reflection on the fact that in the first speech that she made as Premier, the Premier promised the whole province the appointment of a Children's Commissioner. And we're now in 2018, and although there has been movement in that the committee is now discussing this bill, it's very clear that on that particular issue, and also the fact that we haven't appointed the Environmental Commission, in fact is now an attempt to actually scrap that commissioner. Is this something that the Premier regrets not having achieved during her term, given that she is indicating that this is her last annual report? For now, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, I'm going to hand over to the department, and then I'm going to come back to Member Buerta and MacArthur, because I think there was 6 questions in total.
Thank you very much. I will answer parts of those questions, but I will certainly leave it to my colleagues to answer other parts of those questions. Firstly, on the water issue of the Honourable Mackenzie, the drought was so severe and the predictions of rain for the winter of 2017 were so erroneous that we had to switch many, many of our budgets to ensure sufficient water resilience. I think particularly in education, where we had to ensure that our schools would be able to survive day zero if it arrived, and also our health facilities had to be able to continue functioning. So the business continuity program took a lot of resources, but in fact has been extraordinarily successful. So we can say with some confidence that most of our health facilities and certainly our large hospitals are able to function semi or probably almost entirely autonomously as far as water is concerned in many cases. So that was a huge improvement, and the same can be said for many schools. The entire change of consciousness on how to deal with water as a precious resource has been a great advantage, and the number of schools that have installed their own boreholes and tanks to take pressure off the water grid is very, very encouraging. And so this is all a big step in the right direction to become sufficiently climate resilient. So obviously it did have significant financial implications. And I would like to leave it to my colleagues to describe how we juggled that budget. Shall I just do all the questions now as far as I can take them, Chair, and then, okay, right. Okay. Are there any issues that impacted on the good governance principles? I think the important thing to understand about the South African Constitution, Chair, is that while spheres of government have a predominant mandate under the Constitution, no sphere of government in almost anything can have a 100% clear run on a mandate, except perhaps foreign affairs and home affairs. So all of our mandates require cooperative governance with other spheres of government to work adequately and certainly to work optimally. So when I think of the areas where we have been most impacted in good governance, it's been in the difficulties of cooperative governance. I think of the water situation, the fact that the canals were not cleared or maintained, as is the national government's mandate to do, because it is responsible for major water infrastructure, or the raising of the Clan William Dam wall that was supposed to have been completed by June this year, which would have made an enormous difference to be able to save the water that is currently being wasted. And we lost a lot of water through cracked and unmaintained canals and other things, and that we had to divert much of our own budget to maintain the infrastructure that should have been national government's responsibility. Well, of course, that had a very profound impact. Another area that I think very strongly about is the small harbours. The small harbours really should be driving economic growth in this province, and that is one of my great regrets as well. They should be little gold mines of job creation and economic development and tourism attraction. But we tried and tried and tried to get the cooperative governments needed to regenerate those harbors. With local government mandates, local governments across the province were very pleased to come in and assist us. But we also had to deal with the National Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, and the National Department of Public Works, which owns quite a lot of the infrastructure on the harbors. And it simply proved impossible to get any mandate continuity in those departments with a frequent change of ministers. But it was equally difficult to get people to come to meetings and then to get them to have any continuity in coming to those meetings. And it dragged on for years until we went to the Technical Assistance Committee of the National Treasury to help us in complete despair. And the National Treasury saw exactly the potential of what we were trying to do and so did their best to assist us, but were also rebuffed, especially by the Department of Agriculture, Fishery and Forestry and the frequent change of ministers in public works. So the biggest blockage to our doing things that we would love to do and that could have a very major impact on economic growth and other factors of this province is the extraordinary instability and often incapacity of the spheres of government with which one has to get cooperative governance going in order to make any impact. So I would give that as an example. Another big frustration, especially as far as local government is concerned, is that when we do forensic investigations and then we hand over the results of forensic investigations to the hawks, it literally takes years for anything to happen. And one is often sitting on very significant and disturbing evidence, and people simply continue in office, or if they are suspended, sit for years on taxpayers' salaries and nothing happens. And it's an intense frustration about the efficiency of follow-up and the lack of report back on whether something's being done. So obviously we can't interfere in any criminal justice processes, but whether to know if something is happening or not, or if any investigation is proceeding or not, is a hugely frustrating thing, because we have to continue intergovernmental cooperation, often with people who have very significant clouds hanging over their heads in terms of the outcomes of forensic reports that need further follow-up through the criminal justice system, which doesn't happen. So those are just some of the incredible frustrations that we have. I'd like to ask the DG whether he could say something about, but I'm coming, I'll get to about the 92% instead of the 94% DG. Then on page 4, the specific skills that people have gained. Well, I'd like Mr. Hendricks obviously to answer that question, but I think that those skills are going to differ in terms of specific placement of the pay program interns. There are a myriad of potential placements that they can be put into, and obviously the skills that they will acquire depends on that particular placement. I think Mr. Hendricks will answer the unsuccessful candidates. One of my great regrets is that we didn't get the small harbours, for example, buzzing in terms of little economic hubs, job-creating hubs, that we didn't manage to resolve the issues that we require to through intergovernmental cooperation. But I don't have a regret at all that I've changed my position on issues when the circumstances change. Most rational people do that. You can form a position and a conclusion on a set of circumstances. When those circumstances change, you reevaluate and you reach another conclusion. And as far as the Children's Commission is concerned, the factors that pertain when that clause was put in the Constitution had fundamentally changed. And when I was informed of the extraordinary changes brought about by the various laws in the interim and the Child Justice Act and various other laws, and all of the institutions and forums that have been set up to do precisely what the Children's Commission was intended to do, and much more, It seemed that it would be sensible not to duplicate those resources. So I don't have a regret that when circumstances change, I evaluate the change of circumstances and adjust my position accordingly. I'm not an either or. Thank you.
Did you have a thing?
Just to, on the water saving part, the department and the Premier played more for coordinating a role in putting the various functions together. The responsibility for the management of the water lay with the department's local government. To a large extent, and in terms of and the Department of Public Works, the buildings and the taps and the urinals and things like that. As I said, we have more through PTM, I played the coordinating role in the Premier in the water meetings, which I have with all the role players together with the city and other municipalities. We had, I think, about an amount of 2 million rand in our budget, which was intended for the water water framework plan, which we informed this committee about, that is being transferred to the Department of the Government for a bigger plan in terms of where it is. We also accommodated the water engineer in our department, which is the department and municipalities outside, in terms of the water process which we did. Then on the shortage of the staff impact, which was asked by Member McKenzie. We are sitting with an imposed COE ceiling, cost of employment ceiling, which we have to reach, and it's a 3-year ceiling, so it's going down. The amount of funding we have available for to appoint staff, and we have to balance the process really, really delicately to make certain that we actually do have the right people in the right places. And without letting our standards look too much, if we need to make a choice between doing something in 2 days and not filling a post as opposed to filling the post and having it done in 1 day, we make a choice of rather fill a post which is more efficient or more needed than to just do the thing in 2 days. So it's a balancing act which we continuously do, and in terms of that we have appointed a committee of senior officials within the department which evaluate each and every position, each and every request for a post to be filled. If a vacancy occurs, it is not automatically filled. It first goes to the COEFC. They consider the strategic nature of that post, the impact on the budget, filling it, not filling it. So this whole process continuously happening in terms of how we manage the staff. If we see that there's a vacancy occurs in one area, but there's a possible impact on service delivery in another area, we will not fill that post in that period, in that area where the vacancy occurred. We would actually fill it in allocated funding to fill a post in the area which has service delivery impact. So that's basically how we are managing it. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because that's got a whole list here of what it is. All I could say from my side is that in all those instances there were value for money received to a large extent. And then issues impacting, I think Prem has answered that question. Regression in the PDOs, if you'll see that there are 4 PDOs, none of our PDOs were not achieved. 4 of them were partially achieved. And it was a slight variance, so I can take you through which ones it is that we are talking about. And the one instance was because the target was immutable. It was 98.5% was delivered as opposed to 100%. The other one, the target was actually amended, the 100% milestone target for the 1,875 sites. Originally the target was 2,000. The target was subsequently amended to be 1,875. Of the broadband sites which we need to do, and we've actually achieved that one as well, but because it wasn't the original, we didn't calculate it. So, we can give you the details of the 4 specific ones which were not achieved, they were partially achieved, virtually 100% achieved in terms of the game. In terms of the pay project, the skills which were conveyed to these young people are work readiness training, Microsoft Office training, learner license training, life skills, work seeker support, and they also get training in compulsory skills, which include introduction to project management, introduction to office management, introduction to written communication, which we continue to provide in a structured control manner. That's apart from the work experience that I do within the department, the department with our place. Then, I didn't catch the question on the unsuccessful candidates. I don't have a question on this. Okay. Michael, where?
Mr. Hendrickson?
Thank you, Chair. Members, in terms of the pay project, yes. There were 2,228 applicants in the previous round of the pay project, of which 608 were placed. 96 of them were within the Department of the Premier. What we do in terms of the exit strategy when it comes to the pay project, these students are encouraged to apply for to go do further studies, and they can access bursaries which we then advise them of. Some go and apply and are appointed on contract within WCG as well as on permanent. And then what we do, we've got an agreement with RMB to provide support, work seeker support. So in other words, they get a database in terms of the applicants, and that database is then available to RMB or a big employer that approaches us like Old Mutual or Sunlam, and we will make that database available for them to be able to contact. Whether the person was successful or not, they will be on that particular database.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure Honourable McKenzie asked his questions. Do I proceed?
You answer that. It is here, it's not.
Okay, so on page 17, the third last paragraph, it spoke about budget challenges and what the impact is on the budget. Now, the impact that's the clearest is the one on the licensing in CEI, the software licensing, which is denominated in dollars. When we budgeted for this a couple of years ago, we went at 10 rand 50 to the dollar. As you know, it's currently 14 rand 30. In the year under review, it was roughly 12 rand 50 around there. The impact was 32 million per annum. So that's the impact of the rand-dollar exchange on licensing costs. The second one on page 19, the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as noted there, 10 cases. Now the total for these cases, 3,384.98. Of the 10 cases, we've already found 6 were valid expenses because they didn't meet the definition for fruitless and wasteful. Fruitless and wasteful is expenditure made in vain, which would have not occurred had reasonable care been exercised. Now, most of these cases relate to what we call no-show fees for travel. As you know, in CSC, we fly in all the interview candidates for 11 departments. So what happens if somebody in Johannesburg goes to the airport, there's an accident on the major roads that leads to the airport, can't make it for the flight, and there's a no-show fee of 399. Question is, what reasonable care would have prevented that expenditure? Was unforeseen circumstances, those who then become valid. So all of these cases are mostly no-show fees or no-show shuttle fees, small amounts that make up to 3,000 pounds, all related to travel and not necessarily our own employees, it's candidates for interviews.
All right, thank you very much. Honourable Gwota. Okay, no, for actually ask a follow-up now so that we can move on.
Thank you very much, Premier. No, thank you very much for expressing your views on the good governance issue and raising the issues of the harvest. I was just quite surprised that you didn't reflect, and I'd like to ask your view on this. Member McKenzie asked about the water, and we had an unprecedented situation in our province where a leader of a political party, and I'm referring to Mr. Maimani, actually got directly involved in a governance issue affecting the sphere of governance in our province. Do you think that that in any way contributes to good governance? Is it something that you think was correct? Would you approve it? Would you suggest that it happens in future if the city faces a situation like that? because clearly that kind of intervention does not appear in any way to conform with what you've said in your forward around the issue of good governance.
Thank you, members. Can I please urge you to please remain in the book? So Premier, I'm going to allow you to answer the good governance thing, but please, opinions, can we just deal with the book today, please?
I'm not sure where this matter arises in the book, if I may just ask what page it's on.
Chair, thank you. I'm referring to your forward, Premier, in the second paragraph, and you talk about embedding good governance. Embedding good governance, and then I sort of asked, one of my questions was, you know, in terms of that issue of good governance, I've asked you, in your view over the last period, what impact on the issue of good governance? You raised cooperative governance in the Harvard and so on. So I was just surprised that you didn't reflect on that issue, because from where I'm sitting, that clearly that intervention on a huge issue affecting the biggest municipality in this province was definitely didn't embed good governance. And I just wanted to ask whether you agree with that view.
Well, I'm satisfied that everything the province had to do to help manage the disaster that was the drought and impending day zero, we did. So we not only ticked the boxes, but in fact we have preempted many, many things. And because of the excellent officials who work in the sphere, I didn't actually know how much had been done until I was directly engaged in managing the crisis and realized that everything had been done in the long, slow move to that, even to the extent of 18 months previously, making the correct applications and doing the correct things. So I'm satisfied that we did whatever we had to within our mandate of disaster management, which was the only mandate we had in that particular issue. On any broader scale, I can say that if the national government had done its role as far as water and sanitation is concerned, no intervention of anybody else would have been necessary.
Thank you very much. Honourable Bwete, you covered. Honourable Mugabe. No, Bwete is covered.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Just put on your microphone, please.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I want to also add on the question Honourable Dagmar raised on the 92 regression. I just want to check, is the formulation on paragraph 3 was a deliberate attempt to hide or not to take responsibility for the regress, because the formulation just said on average the department annually achieved 94 of its target, but not referred anything to 92. That is a regression. Was that an attempt to hide the real factor, Premier, that or perhaps you underestimate the impact of 94 to 92? That's my first question. The second question on paragraph 4, which talked to the department often has response to ad hoc demand, especially in the corporate service center space, which places strain on already that's the sentence. But I just want to check, does this include the challenge of NYSNA and the Inzamwe to fires when you talk about those hard rock interventions? Thirdly, on paragraph 17, on on paragraph 7, page 17, I think it's page 17. The implementation of the broadband strategy and implementation plan progress. On that sentence, what were these challenges and how did the department deal with those challenges? Also on the same, why did the premier department lowered the targets from 2,000 to 1,875? My last question, Chair, because you have just driven us from page 14 to 29, is page 28-29. Notwithstanding that I still have a bulk of questions as a bear, but I'm prioritizing this one. Premier, I think you have made mention that this is your last report, annual report, and I understand that you also respect demographics, as I do. The Western Cape demographics, as we speak now, drop to 81.8%, almost 82% of black people in the Western Cape residing here, and the only 15.7% is white. That's the reality of the demographics. If you want, you can break that into that 48.8% of colored and the 32.8% of Africans, which to me is not much more of an issue. To me, is the people who are historically disadvantaged by the colonialism of special time. And those people are 81% in the Western Cape, 82% in the Western Cape currently. But looking at this organizational structure, would you believe that is there any attempt to run a representative government in terms of also taking into consideration that those people will have to participate and feel a difference between the pre-94 and post-94 democratic breakthrough? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Member Gopi, and then Member Wiley.
Thank you, Chin. Mine is on page 28 and 29, on the organization, the structure, and my question there is, what is the reason for so many vacancies? Is it caused by resignation? And for how long have these posts been vacant? And my third question is, what was the impact of these vacancies on the work of the department?
Thank you. Honorable Wally.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just been going through the DG and the Premier's reports, and the one thing I don't see there, and she's already alluded to the dysfunctionality of a number of national departments that have hindered her ability to develop certain additional capacities, whether it's water affairs, whether it's public works, harbours and so on. But the one thing she hasn't mentioned is the incredible impact that crime has on this province. And I'd just like to ask both, well, especially the Premier, whether her lack of mentioning crime is that it has become almost second nature that we just accept that it is a completely failed environment in that regard. Because I'm sure that we as a province would have been able to achieve a tremendous amount more had the crime situation not being what it is in the Western Cape at the moment.
Thank you very much. Bring it over to you.
The Honourable Magaka engaged just also two of the components of this question. I think my colleagues will be placed to answer on the broadband components of this question. And then I will, then I think that the impact of vacancies should also be answered by our colleagues. And then I will answer the Honourable Wiley's question. First of all, I can take the Honourable Magaka's point, and I think it's a valid one, that if you look at, in my introduction, you get the average over the years of 94%. In the DG's introduction, you get what actually happened this year is the 92%. So the question we have to answer is the 92%. And perhaps I should have amended my forward to say there was 92% this year and an average of 94 over the period. So I think that that's a valid point, and I thank the Honourable Magaka for pointing that out. When the Honourable Magaka asks about what difference the people of the Western Cape might face, given the management and organisational structures, I think the most critical factor, if you compare 1994 with where we are today, by far the most critical factor, by a long shot, is the level of unemployment. In 1994, there were 4 million South Africans unemployed. Now there are 9 million South Africans unemployed. In the last 10 years, where this government has been in office, this province has created 60% of all jobs in the entire country. This province with 14% of GDP. Now, every single theorist and analyst will tell you that whether or not there is investment and growth and jobs depends on the governance environment. Is there clean governance? Does the infrastructure work? Is there confidence in the stability and the policy direction? Now, even though we haven't a full mandate to impact any of those things because of the cooperative governance and the national concentration of many of these mandates, it is very telling that to the extent the provinces have an impact, which is significant, investment and growth and jobs has happened in this province. And that is a function of good governance. I heard that again last night. And so the impact that has been made on people's lives and the reason that so many black people have come to the Western Cape is so they can feel socially included by getting a job, which is the biggest factor of social inclusion that there is. And so while our population grew by about 680,000, the jobs created were in the order of 640,000 over that period, so we are still at a net loss, but far less of a net loss than all of the other provinces. So I would imagine that unemployed people, who are now number 9 million in our country, the biggest challenge that we face, and it is proved by people's individual choices, opt for the social inclusion of a job and participating in the economy, which is the result of, to a large extent, the good and stable and competent governance produced by various spheres of government, not least of all those on page 28 or 29. And that is not a function of the amount of melanin in their skin. It is a function of completely different factors. And I'm very proud of the team that is here and of the work they do and of the dedication they show. And I don't believe that that is a function of their race. And for as long as this government is elected by the people, we will not do quotas and we will not do racial bean counting. We will look for ethics, competence, commitment, capacity, talent, and the capacity to work together as a team, which this team reflects. And if you would just like to compare this organogram with the organogram even 10 to 20 years ago, you will see the progress we're making in diversity, but we are not racially obsessed, we are outcomes driven in this government. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim, with regard to the first question with regard to the change of the targets on the broadband. That was necessitated by some sites that was on the original list by some departments that were excluded at a later stage that didn't want broadband then. And many instances was for sites being placed under either due to renovations or to relocations. So that we can give you the details of other sites that were moved because of that. So it's about 15 sites we're talking about. We can give you that question that made the change to the necessary. Then with regard to the question on page 28 to 29, in terms of the vacancies, if you go there, you'll see the one that posed the Chief Director Policy and Strategy as before by Ms. Marshall Boston. The post of Chief Director Internal Audit has been filled by Ms. Miles Cancross, so that appointment has happened, and the Director of Employee Relations post has been filled by Mr. Amura Patel. The one vacancy which is there still is the one on the International Relations, and that is mainly due to the fact that we are busy looking at the restructuring of the department and looking at whether it should be a directorate or where it should be that's basically in terms of the further question in terms of what we are doing in terms of changing demographics of our star structure. First of all, we focus, if you look at all our appointments, it is people from this country that are mainly appointed. Very few white males are appointed in this government. Secondly, we focus on training all designated groups to a large extent. If you look at our stats in terms of training, you will see there's a large focus on training members of designated groups to skill them up to make certain that they are available for positions when they apply for them. The third step which we have taken as a government as a whole is that during interviews, it is a standard procedure that we, in an interview, if there is a member from a designated group within 5% of the top scoring person who might not be from a designated group, that we need to take the person from a designated group as the candidate unless it's a very good motivation, and it's the motivation why it does not happen. So we are taking the steps to make certain that we address the issue of both skills and quality of personnel, as well as trying to address the gap that we need to address in terms of employment equity. With regard to the ad hoc demands that's put on the Corporate Services Centre, we regularly get very short notice from National DPSA on Twitter to extend farming to give certain reports to them, and because the Corporate Services Centre, we take responsibility for delivering those reports on behalf of all departments, of all 11 departments and sometimes all 13 departments, and we've got our staff working full time on doing those kind of things to a large extent. Very often there will be survey requests and those kind of things that we need to address. It does take a number of hours per person almost if you do it. It can take days sometimes. Yeah, I think that covers the questions. Is there any question that I haven't answered?
I think Honourable Wiley's question.
Honourable Wiley asked a very important question, and if you look at everything that we set out to do in terms of our oversight mandate, everything from the Commission of Inquiry to the Ombudsman to the Neighbourhood Watchers to the Watch in Greece to the CPS to the partnerships, all of those sorts of things, we have gone as far as we can in setting up oversight infrastructure. What we can still do further is maximize the impact of those partnerships in various contexts. And that is certainly going to be a focus, and one of the reasons why I nominated Minister Windy to go into that position, so that he really can come to grips with that, the complexities of that portfolio and the limitations of what we can do, but maximize the impact of oversight and partnerships that we can achieve in trying to reduce crime. It is perhaps one of the biggest frustrations that we don't have more direct power, and I understand that the South African Constitution is one of the very few in the world that does not give direct policing powers in a decentralized way, either to regions or to local government. And it is one of the biggest blocks on what we can achieve. We've eventually established a very productive relationship with the provincial police under General Jula, which is significant progress as far as we're concerned. And we have now got the anti-gang units hopefully back under General Lamour, and hopefully that will start to have some kind of an impact. And we have managed to achieve the establishment of base camps in some of our worst affected areas. But until policing and the whole criminal justice pipeline, which is a pipeline, comes right, it is going to be extraordinarily difficult to square the circle of that major disincentive to investment and economic growth. So that is one of the challenges that we face, and it really has to be faced where all the power in the criminal justice pipeline lies, which is at national government. And the uncapturing of strategic institutions is essential. The National Prosecuting Authority is still in limbo and not getting anywhere fast. The extent of the corruption in police is not resolved at all, and the SIU and the hawks of the province that affect them, that we've now seen in all of the revelations of the last couple of weeks and what that meant, it's going to take a long time to get those institutions functional again. And of course their dysfunctionality has a profound impact on the work that we're doing. And we see it every day in trying to get some results on, for example, the forensic reports we've submitted to them. So I'm sure that the people who are labouring under the burden of crime don't care what the hell the colour of the policeman is that's investigating it, they just want some outcome.
So, Chief, I'm just making a correction on the vacancy of Chief Director of Policy and Strategy. I see Ms. Marshall, who's going to be replaced. She actually replaced Dr. Plasky in terms of the post, and Mr. Anthony has been for that post. My name is Dr.
Thank you. Premier, can you just switch off your microphone? Members of the inquiry.
Thank you, Chair. It's just a question of clarity. Thank you.
And
question of clarity to the Premier. The Premier made a statement that 60% of all jobs created in South Africa since 2010 were created in the Western Cape. And then she mentioned a figure of 640,000. Is the Premier then saying that only just over 1 million jobs were created in South Africa? Do you stand by that statement, number one? And secondly, I'm not sure if you made a mistake, Premier, but you indicated and you welcomed the re-establishment of the gang unit. And if I heard you correctly, I don't know what other members heard, that you said that General Lamour was heading the gang unit. Sorry, I'm asking the Premier question, number one. So if you could just indicate to us who in your understanding is the head of the gang unit?
Well, I'm afraid that's what I read in the newspaper, so I'm presuming that is the case, that they is mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I read that. But that might be wrong. I mean, you know, that's what I read, and if the journalist got it wrong or if the writer got it wrong, then I'm wrong. I'm not talking about the number of jobs created, I'm talking about the net between loss and gain. So if you, let's say, lose 5 million jobs, and only create 4 million jobs, then you're talking about a net loss of gain, if you know what I'm saying. Alright, well, I'll explain to you later.
A clear statement was made by the Premier that 60% of all jobs created in the entire country since 2010 were created by the working day. I think that's not true, but we will discuss that as we go on.
Alright, Honourable Makaka.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to indicate first before I raise this question, which is more of a follow-up question. I think we all understand where we fall. So that's what informs my questions, Premier. It's not an obsession with race. Of course, I'm a product of a struggle against racial oppression.
Sum up.
I love it. But my question, therefore, is based on the acknowledgement that looking at these demographics to me, they look almost similar if I'm looking at people that are here. With the same, if I cannot follow the names, just the racial outlook of this organizational structure look like as pre-1994. And when you came in as a premier, a lot of work to try to respect the dispensation we are in was there. And if one can come after that 10 years of law and look at this, we'll see a regression from that. That's what informs my mama. That now...
Okay, what's your follow-up, Honourable McGowan?
Yes, I'm coming to my question. Our chair.
Okay.
Now, you raise the issue that the features, so to speak, of which informs you the good ethics, the commitment, and so on. My worry is that the way you reflect it is as if those racial group that are not reflected here, that 82% that is not properly reflected here, are people who are having bad ethics, not committed, not dedication and all. To me, the way you phrase your response, it seems as if they are not compatible with what you refer as good ethics. Ethics, you have to be white to have ethics here. Otherwise, my people in Khayelitsha don't have good ethics.
Honourable Magaka, can you report to
and I'm feeling very offended.
Okay, can you get to the follow-up question?
Thank you.
Okay, that's okay. Are there any further follow-ups? Alright. Premier, I don't know if you want to comment on that comment.
If you want to look for a reason to be offended, you will always find one. You can find any reason in what anybody says to be offended every single day. I don't think ethics is a function of race. I don't think the capacity is a function of race. I am committed to non-racialism. And I thought that when we left apartheid behind, we entered into an era where we judge people by the content of their character and their ability to do a particular job and not the color of their skin. That has to be our objective. We cannot, for example, when people are doing a good job, fire them and get rid of them or not promote them because of the amount of melanin in their skin. And when people apply for jobs, we apply the law as it requires us to apply the law. And we do that with commitment and dedication. But I hope that people in this team believe that they are judged by the content of their efforts, the quality of their work, and not by their skin colour. I put my entire life into fighting racism that judges people by the colour of their skin, and I'm not about to promote systems and structures that revert to that level of crude identity politics to determine where and what people can do.
Right, thank you very much, members. We will then move on to part B of the annual report.
My understanding was that we asked questions, and the questions I've asked up to now are specifically on the pages covered in the Premier's board. There are a number of other questions now in regard to the HOD.
Okay. Honourable Dagmar, I stated that in the beginning, hence we ended up on page 28 and 29.
I know some people went ahead, but we weren't going.
No, well, because I tabled pages together with the introductory remarks because it was there. So do you have any further questions on those pages before moving on? Can you just take it to the page where you ask the question?
Chair, I've just finished with number 4 by the Premier, so the question that I have is actually on page 16.
Page 16?
I just make a number. In paragraph 1 of the HOD's accounting officer's report, there's reference there to strategic goal 5. And the outcomes thereof. I would just like the HOD to almost rate the department's performance in regard to those outcomes. When one looks at the emergence of community protests at a number of different levels, and the issue of divisions in our province and issues around social cohesion and some of the service delivery protests that we've been witnessing. I would just like to ask the HOD for his comment on that, given the articulation of what Strategic Goal 5 actually is, and link that with the reality of what's happening in many of our communities. And then the last paragraph on page 16, the fourth sentence, that the department often has to respond to ad hoc demands, especially in the corporate services center space, which is placing pressure on finite resources. Could the HOD just give a little bit more information and detail about what those ad hoc responses are, in regard to some more detail about what are those ad hoc responses that have had such an impact during the year in review? I think the Premier has clarified in response to my and Member McGarth's question about the 92%. I think that is clarified now. But in paragraph 5, the weakened economic outlook and subsequent compensation of employee restraints constrained the department. In practical terms, could the HOD clarify in what ways did that actually impact on the department's budget, some more detail on that. And then on page 17, paragraph 6, the budget challenges during the year in review, although I think that is, let me leave that one, I think that one was clarified by a financial officer. Specifically in regard to broadband, implementation of the broadband strategy, paragraph 7, progress well despite some challenges experienced. I think it's important for us to actually hear what were those particular challenges when it comes to the rollout of the broadband strategy and how the department deal with them. And in regard to the broadband rollout in general, could we just be reminded of what was the total amount spent in this first phase, and of the expenditure in the first phase, the issue of just a breakdown in terms of personnel expenditure as well as actual goods and services, and was any money actually spent on security for the rollout of broadband,
yeah, those are some questions up to page 60. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. With regard to PSC 5, if you recall, the presentation you always do in terms of the provincial degree goals is the four goals, PSC 1 to 4, the top of PSC 5, the bottom is playing a supporting role in terms of the other PSGs. So our function is in the city inwardly focused, in enabling departments, giving them the tools to do the things that they are supposed to be doing. So, and that's you, and also municipalities, because PSG 5 consists mainly of the Department of Government, Department of the Premier, Treasury, and Environment and Development Planning. So we play a supporting role in terms of enabling the other departments to do their work. Issues like clean audits of municipalities, all those things actually resort on the day and the day. In terms of working on in terms of the inclusive society, improving service delivery, interface between citizens, we put a number of projects running with other departments. For example, the queuing systems in health in Moses Plain. It was largely driven by the Department of the Premier, and we actually funded part of those expansions as well, and produced extensively in the amount of time that patients spend in being serviced in those areas. So we are working with local government, for example, in terms of the app that's developing, where citizens can take a photo of a bottle and create a GIS reference number and send it to the municipality. So all those kinds of things we're busy doing together with other departments and empowering to do things that's supposed to be doing. We plan together with municipalities, largely under the direction of provincial treasury. PTN meets with municipalities, joint planning initiatives are initiated, and we're working towards getting a shared outcome, especially in the next provincial strategic plan. We also work with them in terms of the pilot project, which is running the water project. So we are busy in those areas as well, working at that. So basically, PSC5 is a supportive function, it's an enabling function, it's an empowering function, it's creating capacity for the other PSCs to actually deliver in terms of like a ball fan, it's an enabler. Talking about. In the employee restraints, is there going to be a question?
Sorry, Chief?
The question on the employee restraints.
On the?
Employee restraints, you see. Or the employee restraints, you see. Okay.
A question. I'm not sure. Which paragraph was that? HOD? On the issue of the broadband, the challenges in regard to the broadband, is that?
I think that's the one in paragraph 5, is the paragraph. One on the subsequent compensation of employees. Continued to constrain the department to budget further. As I explained from the beginning, provincial treasury as imposed, financial treasury as imposed, the cost of employment ceiling on departments, and it's a downwards going amount. In other words, our budget can't grow, it actually decreases on an annual basis in terms of, the, of what our expenditure on employees may be. And that is forcing us to, in many instances, not fill certain posts, make decisions in terms of where a post would best be utilized, where the funding for a post would best be utilized, and sometimes that we take away from one branch and we give to another branch, that the post in that produce is more needy or will be more needed to be filled in terms of this. So it is putting a restraint on us. It's requiring our staff to work much harder in the area where we are not filling these posts. So that's basically what we mean in terms of that. Then the challenges with regard to the broad transparency, I can speak to them, but I think it's best if Mr. Emmanuel Zama speaks to them. And then he can give you the total issue about the amount spent in the first phase of broadband and money spent on security as well. Even if you can.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, then there's the challenges with regard to the CEC as well. Mr. Jumat.
Right, thank you, Chair. So, Member Dajil, the challenges that we faced with the rollout of the broadband service relates mainly to the building of the fiber infrastructure across the province. It takes a very long time to do that, given the work that goes into this type of activity. It also requires approvals from municipalities for waivers that will allow you to install these services under the road surface. And then we also needed to obtain building plan approvals for the broadband points of presence in the various locations across the province. And at these water broadband points of presence, we also needed municipal power to be delivered to those. So those are some of the challenges we were faced with. It was dealt with through trying to address those challenges in terms of getting those approvals. We made use of the DG's office who assisted us in trying to unblock some of the delays that we experienced. And I think all in all we've managed to solve the problems in that way, and and that allowed us to reach our 100% milestone target. In terms of the expenditure for phase one of the broadband project, I don't have the phase one ran over a period of 3 years, so I don't have the full expenditure with me. But we can certainly submit that as part of the information that we will provide.
All right, members, can we now, Honourable Dagmar?
And I appreciate that answer isn't available, but if we could get that as a, just provide it to the committee. And I just wanted a breakdown of personnel expenditure and that spent on goods and services in that first phase, if we have that breakdown.
All right, we can discuss that when we do our resolutions at the end. Can get that information by the resolution at the end of the meeting.
That's correct, that's what I'm proposing.
Honourable.
Another question on the adoption of the modern machine in the CSE, but we actually examples of such ad hoc demands that places pressure on CSE resources. May I respond to that? Thank you. So, as you know, the CSC offers about 84 services to the 13 departments of the province. Given then that the nature of the department's requirements are often influenced by extraneous factors, for example, in the national sectors, new policy, new legislative requirements may demand either new process or structural implementation in the province, that then would put pressure on ourselves, that would be unplanned often. That then is a new requirement in any one of our 30 departments, which often derives from the sector, which means that either it requires a new component to be developed in the department or to be redesigned, which puts pressure on our OD people to do that work. That in turn leads to possibility of recruitment, which again is new, not have been planned, and that again puts pressure on another section in the people management space. Typically, we also have a very unpredictable environment in legal services, as you know, that there will be either the requirement for litigation and for us to act in that space, or the requirement for agreements to be entered into with service providers or other types of clients that our client departments may require. So that is not always predictable, it's not always possible to plan it up to the level of perfection that we would require. Another example would be where there is the need for expansion in any one of the corporate spaces
physical expansion, that in turn again required network expansion, which put further pressure and that could be an add-on demand in the ICT infrastructure space. So what we've done in an attempt to mitigate against the nature of all of these add-on response is embarked on the past 3 years on a process which we refer to as demand planning, which is then attempting to get a greater accuracy in as much as is possible of the articulation of the department's demands for R54 services. That's beginning to yield results, but I believe the nature of our business is such that there will always be, as we have now started to term, a degree of hypocrisy in our state. That continues to place pressure on our ability to respond and the nature of our work that we have to respond. We're also not able to then predict the type of resources that we will require. Demand planning is beginning to, I think, narrow the gap between supply and demand and the unpredictable nature.
Right, thank you very much. Is that a follow-up, Uncle Dan?
It's another question, which I'd meant to ask the...
what page 17, just refer to the page.
Page 17, paragraph 7, there's reference there made to the rollout in 6 municipalities that have been reached with a limited broadband rollout to those municipalities. I'd just like to ask which 6 municipalities those are and what were the criteria used to identify those 6, and in the year that we're currently in, and I know we need to avoid necessarily, but it would be just useful for us to get an indication of how many, besides the 6, will be conducted in the year that we're currently busy with. Thanks, Chair.
Right.
I'll ask Alexander to answer the question. All municipalities will be connected. And we're looking at 1 gigabyte per second connectivity to the airports. But Mr. Lugano can report.
Thank you, Chair. So the 6 municipalities that were delivered in the last year are as follows: Brederevallei Local Municipality, Eden District Municipality, George Municipality, Laingsburg Local Municipality, Swellendam Municipality, Stellenbosch Local Municipality. So the locations that I've given you, Member Dougmore, these refer to the main or central sites of either the district or the local municipality. And we connect that site to the broadband service to provide high-speed internet access to the municipality for their own corporate use, if you like. So this is not beyond their office that the service is being delivered, it's simply being delivered to their main site. The sequence in which, or the selection that was made, is very much dependent on what our service provider has in place in those areas. So they do the sequencing based on how easy it is for them to connect those sites. And the ones I've mentioned are the ones that they could reach most easily out of the list of 29 that we have. We have to date, other than the 6 that I've mentioned, we've added in this year, we've added another 7, so we're up to 13 at the moment out of the 29. And we should complete the full rollout to all 29 sometime early next year. I'll have to refer to the project plan to see exactly when we get to the full delivery for the 29.
Just to clarify, so effectively that limited rollout is really to connect the main municipal centre as a minimum, as a starting point. Besides whatever schools may have been connected, that's what it's mean by when you say you bring in a municipality, it's really just Wi-Fi and the central municipal administration.
Yeah, so what I mean by that is that we're connecting, if you like, their office to, so this is where their employees would be sitting and working from. So we're providing them with internet access. So this does not relate to the rest of the services that we provide in the municipality. So we do have schools, rural libraries, Cape Access Centres that we also connect to broadband. But These that we're referring to, these are simply the offices or the municipal offices and their main office in that particular location that we connected.
Honourable Dagmar?
Page 18.
Right, can I make a proposal, Honourable Dagmar, because I think all other members have been covered for those pages, so can you please ask all your questions in that section, so otherwise we're going to go, you're taking us back now.
Okay, Chair, in the table on departmental receipts, in terms of the sale of goods and services, there's quite a difference between 2016 and 2017 with about 2.9 million and in terms of the year under review, 1.8. Is there any explanation for that? And then under the table there's a reference made to bad debts that were written off in terms of the debt management policy. And it's quite concerning that debts to the value of over six, just if we could just get a sense of what those 10 debts were really about and what process was followed. There's reference made to the policy, but could we get a sense of what type of debts those are? That's what I would like to ask. And then just a sense of which, I know small amounts, but the capital assets that are referred to there, which assets were actually sold, in regard to the second sentence in regard to the paragraph under the table, there's reference made to better than anticipated performance. It's mainly due to the refund received from the City of Cape Town, which relates to an unspent grant payment. The change in scope of the broadband project. What are the details of that and the reasons that the grant was not spent? The reference to the hiring of venues at Krom Rea. When are we as a committee able to get a full report on the performance of Krom Rea for the year in question? So if you want me to ask all the questions up to page, the other one that I would like to ask if I can just go to page 20, the last paragraph. The second sentence on international relations, that the department will be reviewing its international relations strategy to establish whether or not it will position Western, it still positions the Western Cape well in its engagement. So could we just get a summary of this process? Where is it, and when can we expect this kind of reviewed strategy to be available to us?
All right. Need you over to you.
Chair, if I say no, so I'm capable of speaking to the Comrade Performance. Mr. Son will be speaking to the financial questions asked, and on the IR review, Mr. Lala will speak to that.
Thanks, Chair. Just on the questions on page 18, firstly, the difference between 16-17 and 17-18 relates to two major items. The first one is the rental of venues or usage of venues and facilities at Krom Rea. This year, in 17-18, we had 725,000 from that rental. The previous year it was 1.3 million, so that's the difference. It's entirely demand driven. Of course, we get requests for the use of the venue. The second item is the sale of government gazettes. In the year under review, 1,022,000. The previous year, 1.466 million. Again, demand driven because people advertise, municipalities, etc., will advertise in it, national government, and that money is coming on demand. So that explains the difference between those. That's also the reason why we have not adjusted significantly our revenue budget over time, because we essentially don't control how much revenue we're going to get in a year. So that's on the first one. The bad debts of 6,300 rand relates to matters such as the loss of the GG vehicle keys. If somebody loses the keys to a GG vehicle, and there's cost to have that replaced. Leave without pay, for example, those debts where it's a small amount and not recoverable from ex-employees, it becomes uneconomical to source that money from the debtor, and that gets written off in terms of our policy. So those are minor debts, 10 minor debts that we dealt with in terms of policy. The assets sold, that would be assets where we get technical reports. Let's say a laptop is 5 years old and it breaks down, it crashes. That laptop gets replaced. The incumbent of the post who utilized the laptop puts in an offer for such laptop and would then be able to purchase that at a cost. Obviously to us there's zero value on that one, so we will then determine in the disposal committee whether we accept the offer or not. That's to do with the sale of assets. Broadband, before we started with the rollout, and Augie de Freitas can add to this one, there was an agreement with the city that we would work with them. They were rolling out their own broadband at the time. There were amounts that we had under transfer payments transferred to the city. In total came to about 55 million over 3 or 4 years. And the 1.62 million is the amount that was left after we cut over to the new liquid telecom service, and we no longer needed the service. But as I said, Augie can speak to that just to add more detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of Comrie, if the member of the committee can determine exactly what should be in that report on the performance, whether it's the actual courses provided, people attended, etc., we will definitely be able to supply that information to the committee. The committee was at on-site visit last year to Comrie as well, but if we can get the details of what's required in for such a report, we can do it. I'm going to ask Mr. Meaty, who heads up the training institute, to give examples of the types of hiring, what the venues are hired for.
Thank you, Chair. We hiring out the venues at Comrie to local government. We're also hiring it out to provincial departments. Now the courses that we have is 43 on our prospectus, and throughout the year there's a schedule of programs that we offer. Most of the courses that we are out is cost recovery. We pay and then we recover the cost. So we will supply the committee with a full a report of everything that we have done in the year in question, and then we will provide that report to the committee as soon as possible.
Thank you very much. Members, can we now move on to page 34?
The National Review.
Thank you,
Shane. Regarding the international relations, we are currently doing a quarterly monitoring of the implementation of the strategy, looking for example as to where the province is going in terms of geographical areas, for what purpose, and also who is interested in us as a province, in other words, the incoming delegations. Because we have focus areas in terms of geographical areas, which are expressed in the international relations strategy. Some of those focus areas that we prioritized is Africa, is BRICS countries, it's the next 11 countries, etc. Now we are looking as to whether or not when departments undertake visits. And they focus on those areas that are prioritized in terms of the international relations strategy. There are also specific strategic goals we were looking at. In other words, areas of focus like skills development, the promotion of trade, tourism and investment, as well as green economy or climate change. To what extent are we interacting with in terms of those strategic goals as a province when we go when we undertake those trips? That is what we are looking at, and we have quarterly monitoring reports of such, and we'll then have a year view of what it, of the extent to which the international relations strategy has been implemented. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Any follow-ups on that? Okay. Members, we're now on page 34 and 35. Well, Dobie.
34. Under service delivery. Second paragraph, they speak about or said it to them that the filling of vacancies was tightly managed, which made it difficult to expand the service offering without being able to increase the number of people required to add more vehicles. My question there is, how many vacancies were affected and what was the impact thereof on the performance of the department? Then underneath it speaks about the chief directorate policy and then when you go down the chief directorate also developed a children's commission draft bill. My question there is, why did it take the department 9 years to draft this bill? And when you go down under chief director also, for more than a year, none of the directors within the chief director had permanently appointed directors. What was the reason for not filling this vacancy? And if I go over to page 35, there the first line there, despite of constraints the chief director has delivered on his mandate and even beyond. Can you give more details about these tasks and mentioned mandates? And the last sentence there, the Center for Innovation user base was grown by 28,600 in the Western Cape government ITC users. I also we have a question on that where are these users and can we get more details about the growth and the numbers that are used there?
What are the delays being specifically with the chief director for policy and strategy, because that post has been, and if we just give a sense for how long has that post been vacant for, that chief director of policy and strategy, and what is the process to fill that? We understand that this was this vacancy came with the resignation of Solange Rosa, and there was a number of issues which emerged at the time reflecting particular concerns and tensions with the manner in which the paper video issue had been handled. we want to know why has there been a delay in filling this for so long, and when was it before?
I'm not going to answer on behalf of the department, but that was not filled. Was that not answered now? Okay, are there any further questions on those two pages? Right, DJ, over to you.
I don't know whether it's in detail about vacancy numbers, but I think we can rather give this committee a full report on terms of what our vacancies were during the period. Centrally, have you got details on the vacancies now?
At the moment it's 0.9 the vacancies, percentage-wise. In terms of the actual details, it's in the part D of our report in terms of the actual numbers, etc.
So the vacancies are listed in part D of the report. It's 0.9% vacancy rate that we have at the moment in this department. With regard to the Children's Commissioner Bill, I'll ask Ms. Corson to speak on that issue. And Mr. Lava to speak on the mandate of international relations part. And 2,600 users, I'll ask either Mr. Arnold or Mr. De Freitas to speak around that. Arnold's opening is probably supposed to speak on that. And then with regard to the Chief Director of Policy and Strategy, that post has been filled now, and it's been filled on a contract basis by Mr. Anthony Hazel. The delay with regard to the appointment of Mr. Hazel's replacement was due to that there was a debate happening between myself and the Premier about the possible restructuring of that unit, of that branch actually, in terms of it, and which is being happening at the moment. There's a discussion happening within the branch on how it would be optimally configured. So that's basically the reason for the delay in terms of that. And that's also the reason why the appointment was made on a contract basis, as opposed to on a permanent basis, because we wanted to have a free hand to actually decide on what the structure should like, that it would have been done by a permanent lawyer in that position. But the other questions, I think the colleagues myself have identified and start answering on the Children's Commission.
Thank you. For the Children's Commissioner, the draft policy guideline or the policy guideline was approved at the end of the 2016-17 financial year, of which the draft bill was developed and approved by the Cabinet in August 2017, after which it was published for public comment. The process was then obviously to go through the public commentary process and the public participation process, where the team in the Department of the Premier have received all the comments and then have taken it into account after a rigorous review process, basically in this year, March of 2018. So the bill has been subsequently amended and has been introduced in the Parliament. We have also presented to the committee in August of this year, and we are currently now in the second round of the public hearings that are taking place in November. To date, two have taken place, and there's another two to still take place. So subject to the processes now within the Parliament, they will then be proceeding with the appointment of the Commissioner.
Related to the 28,600 users, these are all computer users spread across the entire province, across all departments, including hospitals, academic hospitals, clinics, traffic departments. This complex here, number 4 Dorf Street, all the head office buildings in town. So it's all computer users that are connected to our network, spreading over roughly 450 sites. It excludes the schools though, because that is on a separate network.
Right, members, any follow up on those pages? Right, if not, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, pages 52, 53. Honourable Duffy? On your microphone, please.
I have a question on 53 on the department achieved a compliance rate of 91%, which is greatly lower than the previous rating of 91 achieved during 2016-2017. Can I get more clarity about this achievement of 91%? And the lowering of the percentage.
Do you have a clear? Thank you. Sorry, before you answer, Member Gopi, that's the only question on that page.
Yeah, okay. Only one question on that page.
All right.
Now
you're ahead of us again. Yeah, we're not there yet. DG?
The impact is done by the Department of by the Presidency, monitoring evaluation of the Presidency, and it's a national measurement of good governance. And what happens is the rules change on a year-to-year basis of what they are measuring, and that will probably talk about a 2% interrelation. But I can also say that this department has the highest level 4 ratings in the province, which also means the highest level 4 ratings in the country in terms of achievements on the impact compliance requirements that we have. I don't know whether that answers the question or not.
We are measured in the can you just switch off your microphone then? Okay, we're on page 54, 56.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to ask at the bottom of 55, the reference to those 1875 sites, how many of those are at schools? That's my question.
PG?
It's roughly 1,200, but we can give you the detail when we give you the 1,200 at schools. But we can give you the precise.
The follow-up question which could be provided in writing, just a breakdown of that 1875. I'm particularly interested in schools, but also about the number of libraries, and it would be useful for us to get that.
All right, just for the record, that was on page 55. Just need to state that for the record. We're now on page 56, 57, 58, 59. Honourable Gopi?
59, 4.1.3.1 strategic objectives, and then 1, 2, 3 on the third column there, where it says to enable proper departmental financial management as reflected by the audit opinion. And my question is, why did the department target unqualified candidates?
DG?
Unqualified audit is unqualified audit.
a clean audit. This doesn't exist in the terminology, except in where we say that it is. And it's very easy to slip from a clean audit to an unqualified audit, so we just play safe in the same minutes. We're aiming for unqualified audit because it means that we've spent our money correctly, done everything we're supposed to be, and we've achieved our objective as we're supposed to be doing. And there might be other matters which the auditor general might want to us to focus on, but it's still an unqualified audit. There was nothing there which was answered. So that's basically the reason why we stick to our unqualified audit as a target.
Right, Uncle Gabriel classified, and we move on. Mm-hmm. Page 60-61. Honourable McKenzie, then Honourable Gopi, then Honourable Dagmore.
Thank you. On page 61, at about last, just below table 4.1.6, the program underspend by 4.3%, etc., is due to changes in terms of the auditor's data. Can you just give more detail? Because I want to understand what it means, but if you can just share more detail. And from a short-term approach to a medium to long-term approach, is this long-term contract being signed? We can just give more clarity on that. Thank you.
Okay.
Mine is on the office of the premier and the underspenditure in the office of the premier. It has increased the under expenditure, and my question is on that, on the office of the tree.
Thank you. Honourable Dagmore.
Chair, I want to be a day of you, but my question is on page 64. I was anticipating you reaching.
So if you have reached 64, I'm ready.
Please work with this committee. Honourable McKenzie?
Can you assist Member Duggan and ourselves, that is, we do page 60 to page 75.
See, with regard to the underspend on the water resilience program, as I indicated in the beginning, the decision was made that we have a much longer term plan, which I also sent the letter to the committee about, in terms of the rollover of the 2 million rand, which was in our budget, and I sent it. In terms of that, it's been transferred to Transnet Local Government, who's now responsible for the overall long-term plan for water in the province, being assisted by the Department of Environmental Development Planning. So that was basically the reason for the unexpended on that. Did you think of the premium?
Yeah,
thanks.
On the underspending office of the premier, that's largely due to less travel undertaken than anticipated. So from S&T, subsistence and travel. Less expenditure than planned. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We then move on to pages 62, 63, 64, 65. Honourable
Chair, just in regard to the number of policy and strategy papers in response to national and provincial imperatives, that 2.2.2 in the table at the bottom of page 64. I would just request that we get given, although the target was 12, there were actually 19 produced as far as I can see. Could we actually just have a breakdown of what the content and the topics of those papers actually were? And then I think if there's any of them that we would require, the actual document prepared. But it would be interesting to see the topics of those documents, those papers prepared.
Thank you. We got that.
We'll provide it.
Members, can I move on?
On 65, mine is on 2.4.1, number of consolidated reports submitted on strategic international engagement, and can we get more details on the report?
Mr. Lawler, those are the reports on trips undertaken
around international engagements. What countries have we engaged with as a province and for what purpose? They are quarterly.
I mean, now the numbering here was a four, three.
No. It's their reports. Those engagements are consolidated into a report, and they are done on a quarterly basis.
All right, members, can I move on to pages 66 and 67, 68 and 69, 70 and 71, 72 and 73, 74 and 75, 76 and 77, 78 and 79, 80 and 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, 86, 87, Honourable Dagmar.
I just want to refer you to page 86. The issues of strategy to overcome areas of underperformance. Could we just have a sense of the, and maybe this is also just for written information at the end, but details of the broadband service providers and then also details of the expenditure during this period. I think that's a request which could be handled as a request for further information.
Noted. Honourable Dagmar.
I just had another one on 86.
Yeah, sure.
Paragraph under table 4.4.6. There's a sentence there which refers to the infotainment monitors for frontline facilities could not be processed in the interest of good governance due to the entity not complying with prerequisites. Can we actually get a sense, can we have some more detail about this and who was the entity contracted by the department? What work did it do? What work didn't it do? What was the problem here actually? Do we have an explanation?
DJ?
Answers on page 96. Then I'll ask Mr. Arons to speak to the chair.
Chairperson. That is a project that we have, a joint project that we have for the Department of Health, where the intention was to transfer funding to an NPO. This is the Protesty Hospitals Board in order to run the pilot as part of the service interface project. So the entity has not committed, has not done any work for us at this stage yet. So it's about one or two things that we need to get in order before we can do that specific transfer. So no work has been done. We will only do it once the documentation all in order, then we can transfer and continue that project.
Page 88 and 89,
Uncle Dagmar. Chair, could I just ask on the Chief Director for Provincial Forensic Services, has the Department of the Premier been involved in any forensic investigations in the George municipality, and can they indicate to us what is the nature and progress of those investigations?
DG,
over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Provincial Forensic Services is not involved, is not tasked with investigating at the George municipality. It assisted the Department of Local Government with some preliminary assessment. As far as my knowledge goes, the matter is being investigated by the WOCS, by the South African Police Services.
I just want to get clarity, Chair, about when the response refers to assistance. I also asked the nature of the investigation. Could we just have a summary about what was the assistance and what was the nature, what prompted this investigation, what were the issues in the George municipality that required the Department of the Premier Forensic Services to assist local government? Can we have detail, some detail, please?
The Department of Local Government received allegations and requested the Provincial Forensic Services to assess those allegations.
Chair, I don't know if it's like, you know, pulling teeth here, but allegations, what kind of allegations? That's what we want to know.
Right. Honourable Boerta.
Thank you, Chair. Under the period under review, there's a number of 2,222 requests for legal advice. If the department can speak to what was the types of legal advice that had to be given in terms of those requests.
Thank you. I thought that Honourable Boerta had also a follow-up on that. So I'll give you an opportunity to answer Honourable Doug Moore, and then we'll come back to Honourable Boerta's questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Broadly, the allegations involved allegations of irregularities at the George municipality, including aspects of economic crime.
Economic crimes.
Can I just ask just to maybe close this? Could we get a copy of the work done by forensics in the Department of the Premier on this matter? Can we have full detail what those economic crimes were and the written reports that were produced in this regard? Thanks.
DG?
We will just make certain that we can work it to the committee, and then we will supply whatever we can do in terms of that. But we will also interact with the committee about if there's anything we feel that is not correct to give to you. We will interact with you on that matter. So it's not, so we will give you whatever we can, and we interact on what we think that we can't give you, and open for persuasion.
Understood and noted. Honourable Boerta's question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Out of the 2,222 requests for legal services, the majority of that involves 626 requests for legal opinions, 730 requests for contracts to be drafted or edited, 560 new litigation matters were opened, and then there were a variety of smaller, even though one shouldn't be blinded by the number, because obviously to draft a bill is far more comprehensive than to draft an opinion. We had about 9 requests for new provincial laws to be drafted. We had 50 requests for subordinate legislation that would involve regulations, notices and other legislative instruments. And then we also commented on approximately 46 new draft pieces of national legislation. But the majority is taken up by the work that is done under the legal advisory discipline, where there's a bit of a critical mass, because that's where all your legal opinions and your contracts are dealt with.
Are you satisfied, Honourable Magaka?
So the question goes, it was my question also. I just want to check then. The following is that sentence, the latter has provided for the 4 legal training opportunities and reviewed the delegation of 3 provincial departments for consultants with the decision. Can we be provided with the details of these 3, which are those 3 departments, as well as how their cases were addressed?
Sorry, Honourable Member, I'm not with you. I missed that. You're talking about legal training opportunities?
Yes,
can I just get clarity?
Four legal training opportunities.
Okay.
We can provide that information to the committee, please.
Honourable Gwata, I had a follow-up, and then Honourable Dagmar.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the litigation number that was quoted, did any come from the municipalities, and what would that municipalities be?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Municipalities are autonomous entities. They have their own legal services, and interestingly enough, whilst the State Attorney is the attorney for the state and represents us free of charge, and also represents all of the national departments, the State Attorney does not actually represent municipalities. So they tend to their own litigation matters, and we generally do not get involved, other than circumstances where perhaps a municipality who struggles with capacity might ask us to render some support based on our general oversight and support role in relation to the local sphere of government.